Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Show. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Everybody complains that politics is fake. Everybody's worried about looking bad, so they never reveal their true thoughts. We say we want our candidates to be authentic, to tell us what they really think. This week, we found out that that is a terrible idea. We'll ask why, plus the director of the Centers for Disease Control tells us about all the things that will kill us. And Carl Castle gets excited about the new season of Rotisserie Public Radio.
Come on, I need you for my fantasy team.
We'll ask who is really excited about his roster. It's all coming up on this week's quiz, right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. There are fresh protests today against the video denigrating Islam's prophet Muhammad. In Bangladesh, there's a general strike that has shut down schools and businesses across the country. Thousands of security officials are on the street. In Greece, hundreds of Muslim protesters turned out to express their anger. Enormous protests around the world, some deadly, continue against the video produced in the United States. Sajan Gohel is the director of international security for the Asia Pacific Foundation. He says the recent violence is a hint of the future.
This video is going to have long-term repercussions. We may not feel them immediately, but in the future there will potentially be an array of terrorist plots, and those plotters will cite the video as the source that inspired them to take up political violence.
In Pakistan, a government minister is now offering a substantial reward for the murder of the filmmaker. He's called on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda for help. Syrian rebels working to bring down the regime of Syrian President Bashar Assad say they have moved their command center from Turkey into Syria. NPR's Kelly McEver says for now, the move appears symbolic.
Rebel leaders who were based in Turkey have long faced a problem of legitimacy with the fighters inside Syria who battle regime forces every day. Now those leaders, mostly defectors from the regime's army, say they will join their brothers in the push to take Syria's capital, Damascus. Rebels also claim they shot down a fighter jet this weekend, but rebel fighters are still far outgunned by regime forces. In Damascus, some members of Syria's political opposition are holding a rare meeting. Members said they hope the meeting might unify the many different opposition groups both inside and outside Syria, but two members were abducted when they arrived at the airport in Damascus. The government says they were taken by terrorists. Opposition members say they were detained by the regime. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
The super PAC, American Crossroads, founded by Karl Rove, raised another $9 million last month. NPR's S.V. Date reports the amount includes 3 7-figure donations.
American Crossroads got another $2 million from Houston homebuilder Bob Perry, who in 2004 helped launch the Swift Boat attack ads against Democratic nominee John Kerry. American Crossroads has so far run $25 million of ads attacking President Obama and helping Republican Mitt Romney. But while the name behind every donation above $200 to the American Crossroads Super PAC must be disclosed each month, the donors to the related Crossroads GPS tax-exempt group never have to be revealed. That social welfare organization has so far spent more than $60 million in anti-Obama ads this election. S.V. Date, NPR News.
Meanwhile, President Obama is at home today in Washington after having traveled to Wisconsin yesterday. GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney travels to Denver, Colorado this evening. You're listening to NPR News. The Cincinnati Reds have become the first Major League Baseball team to clinch a division title this season. And as Sherry Lawson of member station WNKU reports, the Reds did it without their manager.
With manager Dusty Baker and a Chicago hospital, the Reds became champs of the National League Central Division, winning the second of a three-game home series against the Los Angeles Dodgers. The 6-0 victory gives the team its second division title in 3 years, bringing to mind memories of the big red machine of the 1970s. 27-year-old John Cooley of Cincinnati has been a Reds fan all his life.
I've been waiting for this for a long time. I mean, we're close to pushing a 100-game season. I don't know. It's been a long time since we've had one of those.
On Thursday, the Reds and the Washington Nationals became the first major league clubs to clinch playoff berths as wild card teams. Saturday's win for Cincinnati guarantees a spot among four teams competing for the National League pennant. 63-year-old manager Dusty Baker was hospitalized Wednesday with an irregular heartbeat. For NPR News, I'm Sherry Lawson in Cincinnati.
A giant panda cub born just last weekend at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C., has died. Zoo officials say the cub was found dead this morning after panda keepers heard sounds of distress from the cub's mother. Staffers were able to retrieve the cub about an hour later. The cause of the cub's death is not yet known. 9 climbers died in an avalanche today in Nepal. At least 4 people are missing, according to Nepalese police. Most of the climbers were from France or Germany. At least 5 people survived the accident and were taken to hospitals in Kathmandu. The climbers were trying to summit Manaslu, the 8th highest mountain in the world. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from PBS with Dropout Nation, a frontline film on the causes, challenges, and potential solutions to America's high school dropout crisis, Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern on PBS.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Whoa, thank you. Southern hospitality. That is very kind of you. We got it's great to be here in Atlanta. We got a great show for you today. We got Dr. Thomas Frieden. He's the head of Atlanta's own Centers for Disease Control. He'll be coming by later to tell us why we should never, ever go into very large theaters filled with people. He just sees you as disease vectors. But first, I got to say, we are so excited to have the one and only Carl Castle back here with us. We've missed you, Carl. You've been gone, Carl. You've been gone for 3 weeks. What were you doing all that time?
Yeah, it was pretty uneventful, Peter. I helped out Clint Eastwood with an idea for a speech. I gave Lindsay Lohan some driving lessons. And I made a great video at a Mitt Romney fundraiser.
Glad you kept busy. So Carl is back. He's ready to go. If you are too, give us a call. The number is 1-888. Wait, wait. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on. Wait, wait. Don't tell me.
Hi, I'm Roxanne from Philadelphia.
Hey, Roxanne from Philadelphia. How are you?
I'm good.
Apparently, you have some fans here. Are you notorious for some reason?
I've never been to Georgia, so I hope not.
No. Well, welcome to the show, Roxanne. Let me introduce you to our panel this week here on stage at the beautiful Fox Theater. First up, a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning, whose documentary Electoral Dysfunction opens in theaters this weekend and airs on PBS next month. I'm talking about Mo Rocca. He's here.
Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Mo.
Next up, a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning and to the new Ricky Lake Show. It's Faith Saley from Atlanta, Georgia.
Hi, Roxanne.
And an author and humorist whose latest book is Alphabet or Juice, Decatur, Georgia's own Roy Blunt, Jr. is right back here. Hey, Rocky.
Hi.
We'll start us off, of course, with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle, back, rested, and ready from his time off, is going to recreate for you 3 quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just 2 of them, you will win our prize. Of course, Carl's voice on your voicemail or whatever you're using to intercept messages. Ready to go?
Definitely.
All right, here's your first quote.
Well, it wasn't elegantly stated. Let me put it that way.
That was somebody admitting he didn't put it elegantly when he said at a private fundraiser that 47% of Americans were bitter moochers. Who was it?
That would have been Mitt Romney.
Yes, indeed, Mitt Romney. Very well done.
It's hard to put your foot in your mouth elegantly, really.
It really is hard to do that. So the Romney campaign has been in damage control mode ever since the video of his remarks at a fundraiser came to light this week. As you heard, Romney admitted that he could have disparaged 47% of Americans more elegantly. How exactly would you do that? With a British accent? I say, terrible pity about the riffraff, eh? What?
These private gatherings are always a problem. 4 years ago, it was Barack Obama with the voters clinging to their guns and religion. Now it's Romney with the 47%. We should just cancel all the debates and have a gigantic fundraiser where everyone's invited. Then we can hear what these guys think.
That's true. This is the later development. It was revealed that there's 2 minutes missing from the videotape. Did you hear this?
Mm.
That the video is in two parts and there's 2 minutes missing in between them. And a lot of Romney's defenders on the internet were like, it's not complete. So somehow these 2 minutes will exonerate him. And the question is, well, how? How could these 2 minutes make it all seem better? Well, we couldn't find the video, but we did get a transcript of what he said in those 2 minutes that exonerates him. Here's Carl with a reenactment.
And now, I will continue with my impression of a jackass.
I can't keep up with the percentages either, because it's... Okay, so I pay taxes, so I don't know if I'm in the 53%, but I'm not part of the 1%.
No, no.
So I'm the 52%, I guess. I just...
You know...
And then, I don't know.
If I knew that this whole politics thing was going to involve math, I wouldn't have gotten into it, you know?
What I count on is the 13% of Romney's hair that is white. I love that. Don't you love that? Just the little, it's so handsome.
Now, what's interesting is one of the criticisms of Romney is that all during his campaign for president, which I think has lasted 7 years, we've never seen the authentic Romney. Now, they always say he's not authentic, he's too stiff, he's not real. Now we've seen the authentic Romney. What do you think?
He did
he's more than 13% white, I'd say that.
Yeah. Roxanne, here's your next quote.
She's great, but she shouldn't be sunbathing in the nude. Only herself to blame.
That was Donald Trump, who himself should never be doing anything nude. Talking about whom?
Kate Middleton.
Exactly right. Kate Middleton, also known... Known now as the Duchess of Cambridge, known in the future as the Duchess of Hutness. She was photographed sunbathing topless at a villa in the south of France. The British government is not taking this lying down. They've filed suit against the magazines that published the pictures. They've convinced eBay not to sell the existing issues. This is the biggest victory the British have won in decades. Really, they've come back. If you can imagine Braveheart rallying the troops. Aye, they can take our empire. But they can never take pictures of our breasts!
Those royals love to get naked.
Do they? Oh, yeah, well, we have the Prince Harry thing.
I won't be satisfied until we get to see Fergie's daughters wearing nothing but those wedding hats.
By the way, this is true. Both the magazines that published the photos in Italy and in France happen to be owned by none other than Silvio Berlusconi.
Right.
That's true. Mr. Berlusconi has promised a personal investigation. He says he's going to determine how accurate those topless photos are.
But please, we do not want to see him topless.
She's too old for Berlusconi.
And there's not enough of her either.
Yeah. Even more embarrassing for the Duchess, of course, is the surreptitious video taken in which her boobs are caught disparaging 47% of the British people. Your last quote, Roxanne, is from a big football fan talking to one of his favorite players last Sunday.
Come on, I need you for my fantasy team.
His expression of enthusiasm wouldn't have been a problem except for the fact that the fan was also what?
Oh, I don't know this one. A football player?
Not another player, but he was on the field.
Oh, I don't know. A referee?
Yes, a referee who was one of the replacement refs. The real NFL referees are being locked out by the owners. The only people they could get to take their place are guys whose entire referee experience is watching their friends play Madden football on Xbox and yelling, "Aw, man, that can't be right." These refs have missed plays. They've blown calls. One of them was pulled. This is true at the last minute, right before the New Orleans Saints game. He was supposed to referee because he posted pictures of himself in New Orleans Saints gear on Facebook. He was a big fan. Worst of all was when the whole refereeing squad during the game ripped their shirts off and it spelled "Go Saints" across their naked chests. This is the thing about this strike. I mean, you know, most strikes just makes you angry at the people striking. But it's not a strike. It's a lockout, of course. But this will make people absolutely grateful for the refs because the replacements are so bad. We're never going to take them for granted again. They're going to come back and fans will be yelling, "Hey, you need glasses to protect your eyes from the harmful UV rays of the sun."
Pretty soon, a referee is going to intercept a pass, and then you're...
Carl, how did Roxanne do?
Roxanne, you had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done! We want to remind everyone they can join us most weeks back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Illinois. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, or you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Mo, according to scholars of the ancient Middle East, a fragment of a manuscript suggests that Jesus was what?
Married.
Yes, indeed. The tiny fragment is a fraction of the length of a Dan Brown novel, yet far more enjoyable. It includes the quote, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife,'" and then it trails off, it breaks off. Scholars are amazed. This is the first indication that Jesus was a stand-up comic.
That's it? That's all it says?
It's all it says,
"My wife"?
Jesus said, "My wife." Now, there's no real indication that Jesus was actually married because we don't know what the rest of the text was. Maybe it goes on to say, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife doesn't exist. What's wrong with you people?'"
No, maybe he was saying, I don't know, "My wife beater is a bit too casual for this occasion. And I should wear a long sleeve shirt."
Yeah. Maybe a robe or something.
Yeah. Some scholars, though, think it's possible that Jesus might have been married. He was a nice Jewish boy. He would have gotten pressure from his mother.
He got out of the house an awful lot, though.
He did, yeah. What would his home life would have been like if he were married? Jesus, sometimes you act like you walk on water. But there'd be advantages to having Jesus as a husband. It'd be like, "Jesus, does this dress make my butt look big?" Poof, not anymore.
Jeez, wow. I wonder how his wife got along with her father-in-law.
Coming up, our panelists do a little myth-busting in our Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play, and Dr. Thomas Frieden, head of the CDC, is doubling up on his hand sanitizer because it's almost time to play Not My Job. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories with ratings based only on member feedback. Angie'sList.com. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. Progressive Insurance, helping people shop for car insurance at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Roy Blunt Jr., Faith Saley, and Mo Rocca. And here again is your host at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, guys. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Robin in Iowa City.
Hey, how are things in Iowa City?
They're great.
That's great. Iowa City is a beautiful place, home to the University of Iowa.
It is.
The Fighting Hawkeyes.
It is, the Fighting Hawkeyes.
And what do you do there?
I work for the College of Medicine teaching global health.
Really?
Wow. Yes. Wow, that got received well in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is the home of the CDC. They like global health.
I know, I just know.
Robin, welcome to the show. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Robin's topic?
You crush my dreams, Peter.
We all grow up with certain truths we consider absolute. The sun rises in the east. Santa Claus brings us presents. But this week, our panelists are going to shatter your illusions about one such piece of gospel. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home voicemail. Ready to play?
You bet.
All right, let's first hear from Roy Blunt, Jr.
While going through some old papers in a small town library recently, University of North Texas historian Thomas Horn, whose specialty is old cowboy culture, came upon a crumbly manuscript that first thrilled him and then broke his heart. According to this first-hand account, the real original Texas cowboys did not wear anything resembling cowboy hats. The hats described and sketched in this manuscript were very remarkably like the round, short-brimmed hat that T.D.'s Gilligan wore on the island. Enough sun protection without the ostentation. But there's more. Back in the old days, only the rich ranch owners rode horses. Working cowhands generally rode the cows.
A discovery that shatters our myths about cowboys. They wore Gilligan hats and rode cows. Your next story of truth coming out at last comes from Faith Saley.
We like our Victorian poetesses to be well-behaved, hermetic, and benignly eccentric. And Emily Dickinson has always delivered. But recently discovered journals kept by Emily's sister Lavinia reveal that the Belle of Amherst was more like the Hell of Amherst, as in Hellraiser. The prim American poet, known for her iconoclastic verse and her rich inner life, apparently had a bangin' nightlife. According to Lavinia's diaries, come sundown, Emily would don men's clothing, enhance her own slight mustache, and head out for some carousing, calling herself slyly Dick Emelson. Even in the 1850s, Amherst was a college town, and the woman known as Dick had plenty of drinking buddies. She excelled at the 19th century version of quarters, known by the college kids as seated liberty half dollars. She also played a mean version of beer pong, which involved chucking bullets into mugs of ale. This revelation has rocked the lit crit world. Fran Kriegel, professor of poetry and folklore at Oberlin College, says with a sigh, "Syntactically speaking, our Emily may have been less innovative than inebriated." Now scholars are looking at her inimitable style of dashes, slant lines, and unorthodox capitalization as a kind of 19th century drunk texting.
Emily Dickinson, party animal. Your last story of something that's not quite what you thought comes from Mo Rocca.
A publicist lying to make his client look better? What's new, pussycat? A publicist manipulating the public with staged events. It's not unusual, not even in the case of legendary Lothario and heartthrob Tom Jones. In a new book, PR kingpin Jay Bernstein says he paid girls to toss room keys and underwear at Tom Jones. Bernstein was inspired by a real event. At New York City's Copacabana Club, Jones was working the crowd when all of a sudden a woman stood up, peeled off her panties, and hurled them at a stunned Jones. So the next year, when Jones was getting a lukewarm reception at Vegas's Flamingo Hotel, Bernstein, armed with a fat wad of Benjamins, rounded up a bunch of women to fling their knickers at Tom Jones. quote, I chose the ones who seemed extroverted and hungry for a laugh. The biggest surprise, Tom Jones himself never knew. His likely response to his publicist now, why the lies? Why the lies?
That's very good.
Thank you.
All right, here are your choices. From Roy Blunt Jr. Turns out cowboys didn't wear cowboy hats, but sort of little silly hats like Gilligan did. From Faith Saley, Emily Dickinson, despite what you've heard, got out and about. Or from Mo Rocca, those girls throwing their panties at Tom Jones, paid to do so by his own publicist. Which of these is the real story that shattered our dreams?
I'm going to guess that you had to pay those Tom Jones fans to get that excited and kind of rig it.
Oh, you're going to go for Mo's story then?
Yep, I
of women being paid to throw their panties at Tom Jones. Well, we spoke to one of the people who brought this terrible story to light.
The women were paid $25 for throwing the room key and $50 for throwing panties.
That was David Rubini. He's one of the co-authors of the book Star Maker, Life as a Hollywood Publicist. Congratulations, Robin. You got it right. You're the point for Mo.
Thank you.
And you have won Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine. He's back, he's better than ever, and he's ready to do that for you. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin. Thanks for playing.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine.
And now the game where people who do important things see what it's like to do something else. Everybody who watches TV or movies knows when the mysterious disease breaks out, when the zombies come, when the meteorite causes people to mutate into giant glowing worms, well, the place you go for answers is the Centers for Disease Control right here in Atlanta. Thomas Frieden is the director of the CDC, and we are delighted and somewhat worried to have him with us now. Dr. Frieden, welcome to the show. Great to have you. We looked up your credentials. It says you're an MD, MPH, you're the director of the CDC and the administrator of the ATSDR, and you're formerly of the WHO and the DOHMH and the implementer of the RNTCP in India.
Mm.
How do we know those all aren't just made up?
Wikipedia, of course.
Wikipedia, we found that out. That's true. So you started in something called the EIS,
yes.
The Epidemic Intelligence Service.
Yeah.
It's a round of applause. And this is, these are the guys, like in the movies, like in Contagion, they're the guys who show up and get off the C-130 cargo plane with a stern look in their eye,
yep.
Usually played by attractive young actresses, and they go out and find out what's going on.
It's very realistic.
Yeah. You do look a lot like Gwyneth Paltrow, strangely, so I guess. And so you're going out, I mean, you did this, you went out there into like potential disease outbreaks and found out what was going on?
Yes. Yes. In my time, my particular couple of years, it's a two-year training program,
right.
Was on tuberculosis and drug-resistant tuberculosis.
Right.
That was spreading. And we stopped it.
You stopped it?
Yep.
And where was this?
This was in New York City.
Really? So you were like, you were roping in off of helicopters to stop tuberculosis? That's pretty cool.
It was more like rounding in hospitals and going around from room to room, making sure the patients were on the right treatment.
That's not what I saw in the movies. There was definitely ropes, there was definitely helicopters.
What's your favorite disease?
Yeah, what is? You must have one.
It's like, oh, Ebola again, oh, goody, or something.
How about something like Malassezia furfur?
Oh, she's great. I love her. It's a very popular celebrity baby name.
What is that?
It's a rash that doesn't cause any harm. Oh. It sounds great.
Oh. Malassezia furfur?
Yeah.
I never want to forget that.
That sounds like the person who was trying to remember the name just forgot and started making stuff up halfway through. It's like, you know, Malassezia furfur. Hope no one would notice.
Okay. Why don't all those people just move to the east side of the Nile?
All right. Seems like a simple solution.
I mean, just like there must be bridges, just move to the other side. If the west side is giving you that much problem.
Okay.
Is the CDC in part responsible for, you know, the standing Purell dispensers that are all everywhere now, especially on cruise ships?
They've gotten real popular, and cruise ships is something that we work on closely with the cruise ship industry to try to make sure they're as safe as possible.
Do you get to go on cruises all the time?
Not personally.
All right, I have a question. You've opened that whole Pandora's box. We have to talk about hand sanitizing lotion. The issue that I have is that in my office, when I do my thing, I then wash my hands. There is a hand sanitizing lotion dispenser right outside of the bathroom. Here's the problem. When I leave the bathroom after washing my hands, I want to go there for extra cleansing. But people that are standing around there look at me, and then I think, they're going to think I didn't wash my hands in the bathroom. Mm. So I'm too embarrassed to use it. So should I just get over it? What should I do?
I think you need to talk about that with somebody else. So more,
a different kind of doctor. I have to talk to you. I have to ask you about this. We covered this on our show when it happened, but the CDC, your organization, recently issued an actual statement saying that America was not actually suffering an outbreak of zombies.
We were happy to be able to clear that up.
And is this something you monitor, the zombie situation?
Peter, if anyone comes up with a way of diagnosing someone as being a zombie, I can guarantee you it will be the CDC.
Really? But I've noticed that the CDC's, you know, the statements tend to be very calming, very official. So I imagine it won't be like, oh my God, there are zombies. Mm. But it'll be like, the CDC has become aware of shambling, cannibalistic mm-hmm. dead people. We advise Americans to maintain a safe distance. Mm-hmm. And if necessary, shoot them in the head with a shotgun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to ask you, you were the head of the CDC. Did the memo about the zombies come to you for your signature?
No.
It didn't?
No.
So you picked up the newspaper and said, oh, my organization has just issued a statement denying that they're zombies. Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Glad they don't need me monitoring their everyday activities.
It was actually a great way to get people to think about, you know, if you're prepared for a zombie, you're really prepared for a hurricane, a tornado, an infectious disease, just about anything.
And it's like, if you're prepared for zombies, you're prepared for hurricanes. The hurricane's bearing down on Florida, and they're all standing in their front yards with a shotgun. I don't think so. Dr. Frieden, you've devoted all this effort to helping people live better, more healthy. Do you yourself have any unhealthy habits, like, you know, pork rinds?
I have a sweet tooth, so I love pies down here in Atlanta.
Pies?
Cheesecake in New York. I love whatever's sweet.
I happen to have a fried peach pie from the lunchroom.
I should say to the people at home, Roy Blunt actually just tossed a deep-fried peach pie to the director of the CDC. I've always wanted to say something like this to someone like you. You know, those will kill you. Well, Dr. Frieden, we are delighted to have you here, and we thank you for the good work you've done for public health. But right now, our purpose is to play a game that this time we're calling...
Try to stop these viruses.
So some viruses, like Ebola, are bad. Viral marketing, though, worse. Companies are constantly trying to make their campaigns go viral, infecting brains all over the world. We're going to ask you about three such viral marketing campaigns. Get two right, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Dr. Frieden playing for?
He is playing for Luke Copeland of Warner Robins, Georgia.
All right, you ready to play? All right. Here's your first question. Adidas, the sporting goods company, came up with what they thought was a great viral marketing idea in Japan. It was a phone app that, when you activated it, did what? A, permanently alter all your photos in your phone so that everyone in them is wearing Adidas clothing. B, changes your ringtone to a voice yelling, I'm fat and slow because I don't exercise enough. Or C, find your house and destroy it.
I'm baffled, but I'll have to go with, knowing that there's some odd marketing campaigns in Japan, B.
Change your ringtone to a voice that yells in Japan, I'm fat and slow because I do not exercise. I'm fat and slow because I do not exercise. Is that your choice?
B. I'm going to stick with
B. You're sticking with B. You admire his firmness of opinion. However, you're wrong. It was actually C.
Oh.
Let me explain how this was supposed to work. It was supposed to advertise this new marketing tie-in with Star Wars. And you know how in Star Wars, the planet Alderaan is destroyed by the Death Star? Well,
if you activate the app would use public records to find your address and then show you your house being destroyed by a death beam to be replaced by the Adidas logo. And this would somehow make you want to buy Adidas products.
It didn't work?
It did not work. People were very upset.
The Surgeon General would have gone with C.
That's all right. You have two more chances. You still might survive this. The makers of the video game Splinter Cell Conviction, that's one of those shoot 'em up games, tried to generate excitement for their game in New Zealand by doing what? A, faking an invasion by angry Maoris. B, sending a guy dressed as a terrorist to pretend to take over a bar. Or C, sending death threats to every male in New Zealand aged 18 to 34. The time for action is now, Doctor.
All right. Then I'll go for B.
You go for B. Yes, it was B. Very well done. The idea, they set it up for this guy dressed as a terrorist would jump into this bar and wave his gun around, and then some hero actor would jump in with another fake gun and do away with him, and that would be like, oh, this is really exciting. I should like to play this on my video game console at home. What happened instead was that everybody in the bar freaked out, started screaming in terror, called the police, and everything went to hell. But it was a good idea to start with. All right. You're one for two with one to go. Here's your last question. Toyota wanted to get in on viral marketing, so they tried to promote their new car, the Matrix, with sort of this virally spread service, which would allow you to do what? A, have one of your friends stalked by crazy strangers. B, arrange to have a Matrix filled with cute girls pull up next to you at a light and wave. Or C, instantly create a fake criminal record for yourself so you can seem edgy even though you were driving a Toyota.
B.
You're going to go for B. I'm afraid it was actually A. And the idea was, you could submit your friend's name to the service and then they would be stalked virtually online by one of five, quote, virtual lunatics. People calling you, sending you emails. How this was supposed to sell cars was unclear. Especially after one victim sued the company for emotional distress. Carl, how did Dr. Frieden do in our quiz?
Well, Peter, the doctor needed two correct answers to win for Luke Copeland, but he had just one correct answer.
Well, sure. But you probably saved him from dying a premature death from some horrible disease. So let's call it even, shall we not? Dr. Thomas Frieden is the director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Frieden, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
A pleasure to have you.
Keep your distance from it. Don't pay no attention to me. I got a disease.
Just a minute. Carl eats his vegetables in our Listener Limerick Challenge. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Chevrolet, makers of the Volt, an electric car that runs on electricity or gas. To go farther, details at ChevyVolt.com. CSX transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And Esurance, an Allstate company, offering Express Lane, a tool that looks up users' vehicle information when getting a car insurance quote. At Esurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, and Roy Blunt Jr. And here again is your host at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl.
in just a minute. Carl says, frankly, Scarlett, I don't give a rhyme. In our listener limerick challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Facing probing questions from reporters, a State Department spokesperson was forced to deny that the United States has any plans to do what?
I need a hint, please.
It might be retribution for infecting us with Bieber fever.
Export Justin Bieber?
No.
Deport him?
No, it would be sort of
send
vengeance.
Him back to Canada?
No. The State Department denied that the U.S. is planning to do something else to Canada.
Invade.
Yes, invade it.
Oh my gosh.
A State Department official was briefing reporters on a new agreement signed by the U.S. and Mexico, and a reporter asked if the agreement included any plans for a joint invasion of Canada. And the spokeswoman replied, quote, who told you? Actually, no, she said, quote, no, it's not anything classified, unquote. Note that she didn't say, no, we're not invading Canada. Nor did she say anything about the new camouflage uniforms given to the 101st Airborne, their plaid flannel shirts and Dockers.
Well, this is the time we ought to go ahead and do it now before it gets cold, I'll tell you.
Yes. Mo, it was 30 years ago this week that what was invented by a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon?
Oh. So something was invented by a computer scientist at Carnegie Mellon. It's not something about Apple. It's not the internet.
Something that's made all kinds of emails and texts much more evocative.
Oh, the emoticon.
The emoticon was invented 30 years ago this week. Very good.
Oh.
It was such an important day in the annals of human communication. Without it, whole generations of teenagers would have had to learn how to write in words. On September 19th, 1982, Professor Scott Thalman of Carnegie Mellon put up a post on a computer bulletin board suggesting a colon, a dash, and a closed parentheses, which looks like a smiling face if you look at it sideways, as the official indicator of humor in online communication. Do you guys use emoticons?
No.
No.
I mean, it's usually a there are two camps, right? There's the LOLs who do the same thing. It's LOL or emoticons. I have to say that it took about 3 months to adjust to the fact that he's my husband now, but when we were dating, he used emoticons. And it was tough. It was, I mean, I am a feminist, but I felt it was very unmanly. I don't like gender stereotypes, but it made me feel uncomfortable.
No, but I do a Teddy Roosevelt Rough Rider emoticon. So that's very manly. It's an eight, and then it's followed by, not the bracket, what's the swishy bracket?
Is that the mustache?
One. Yes, that's the mustache. And then you do a zero for the mouth, so that it looks, I'm telling you, it looks like TR.
But what emotion or state of mind are you using little Teddy Roosevelt to indicate?
To speak softly and to carry a big stick.
Right. Roy, researchers in Britain have determined through science that one of the most embarrassing things in the world is what?
it's falling downstairs. That's my main one, really.
I'll give you a hint.
Falling down several flights of stairs.
Wait a minute.
Roy.
No,
it's more painful than embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it depends on why you fell down the...
If you're wearing heels, in your case, then
yeah,
embarrassing.
Can you give this one to Faith? I don't want to go into my...
Well, wait a minute. Do you need a hint, Dad? I mean, Roy?
Fathers are the most embarrassing people.
That's true, but no.
You said dad?
I did.
You mean you sort of Freudian slip? You
specifically.
Dad? I mean, this is very confusing and disturbing, right? Son?
Calling
yes.
Calling somebody like
by the
wrong name.
Well, specifically calling somebody mom or dad.
Mom or dad, yeah.
That's, you have not called your spouse mom or dad by accident.
Are you kidding?
Then you have not been
married. Oh, my gosh, it happens. Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, do you stay married after you do that?
No, you poke your eyes out, right?
Yeah, I believe so. According to a recent British study, there are at least 50 ways, including that one, humans embarrass themselves every day, from thinking someone's waving at you when they're not, to accidentally liking something on Facebook, to whatever Joe Biden is doing right this second. Here are some other things on the list. Forgetting someone's name when introducing them.
Yeah, that's bad.
Tripping over in public.
Always funny.
I told you.
Getting someone's name wrong. Not being noticed by someone you're waving at.
Ooh. Oh, that's terrible.
You know what's funny? The same thing that works with fortune cookies works with these. They're all worse, or they still work when you add in bed. So, like, not being noticed by someone you're waving at in bed. Forgetting where you parked in bed.
Calling someone dad in bed.
Yeah. Coming up, it's Lightning Fell in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows back at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show at the Riverside Theater in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Tickets are on sale now. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Daryl from Houston, Texas.
Hey, how are things in Houston?
It's nice. Weather isn't boiling hot, so I'm pretty happy.
That's cool. What do you do there?
I'm an environmental scientist for the city.
Wait a minute. You're an environmental scientist and you work for the city of Houston?
Mm-hmm. Yes. There are a couple of us, yeah.
Really? So what do? You just go into the office every day and go, man, things are bad. Well, welcome to the show, Daniel. Carl Castle right now is going to read you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Here is your first limerick.
Most killer whale boys here, like Tommy, grow up to be clingy and glommy. While hunting, they roam, but still live at home. They like to stay close to their...
mommy.
Yes, mommies! According to a study in the journal Science, male killer whales live with their mothers well into adulthood. They're not so fierce. They're mama's boys in the animal kingdom. That explains why Shamu's mom was always like, you can't go swimming right after you eat. I don't care if you live in the ocean. Very good. Here is your next limerick.
They've made those green foods sound more edgy. Will they proffer the strength to give wedgies? I'm seeing the merit of X-ray eye carrots. I like the rebranding of...
veggies.
Yes. Scientists at Cornell University say you can trick your kids into eating their vegetables by calling them something different. Instead of carrots, call them orange mouth missiles.
Oh.
Instead of spinach green, Superman food. The problem is when your kids have all, you know, grown up and they're out on a date, you know, and he says, waiter, I'll have the green Superman food. And the lady will have the dinosaur eggs.
What do you call Brussels sprouts? Yucky balls?
You have not had my Brussels sprouts.
No, I have not. And please, this is a family show.
Yes. They're very Brussels sprouts.
I used to... We had to eat our vegetables before we were allowed to leave the table. And my mom would put melted Velveeta over Brussels sprouts to make them
work?
Better. And I remembered I would swallow them whole.
Okay, here is your last limerick.
At Disney, we like to spread cheer, but alcohol we used to fear. But now Mickey thinks you might need some drinks, so Fantasyland offers...
Oh, man, awesome. Cheer.
Yes! This week, Disney World Orlando announced it would finally begin serving alcohol in the park to regular customers for the first time at its brand new Fantasyland restaurant. The park will become a new place for every visitor now that they have alcohol.
I'm shocked that Disney World has not sold liquor until now. I mean, how could you tolerate it sober?
There was stories, I've never been, that there was a special club in Sleeping Beauty's castle, where if you remember, you could get in and you could have a drink.
Sleeping Beauty doesn't have a castle at Disney World. Does she? Isn't it Cinderella's?
Beauty. It's in Sleeping Beauty's castle.
It's Sleeping Beauty.
It is?
And she's sleeping because she's drunk.
Exactly. She's lying there going, man, am I going to be regretting this in Tomorrowland? Carl, how did Daniel do in our quiz?
Daniel, you had 3 correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations. Bye-bye. Now it is time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Roy Blunt Jr. has 1 correct answer, Peter. Faith Saley has 2. Morocco has 4.
Roy, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. A Justice Department investigation said Wednesday that Attorney General Eric Holder did not know about the failed gun-running operation known as blank.
Fast and Furious.
Right. On Thursday, a California judge denied an actress's request to remove the controversial blank video from YouTube.
The Innocence of Muslims.
Yes, the one. After reviewing his birth certificate documentation, Kansas announced this week it would include blank's name on presidential ballots in November.
Barack Obama.
Yeah. A British man was hauled into court for making his neighbor's lives a living hell by refusing to blank.
Refusing to lower his voice.
Refusing to stop blasting power ballads from his stereo. For the 12th straight year, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett took the number 1 and 2 spots on Forbes' list of America's blanks, people.
Wealthiest.
Right. Zookeepers at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. announced the surprise birth of a baby blank.
A little koala bear.
A panda.
Oh. Gee.
The Twisted Root Burger Company in Dallas is complimenting customers in an unusual way for offering discounts for blanking.
The Twisted Root Burger
Company.
Company. For being able to say the name of the company without throwing up.
No.
No.
For having a good butt.
Oh, yeah.
Good news, you get a discount on your check for having a nice butt if your waiter decides that you do. Bad news, it's just a 2-cent discount. It's one of several unusual discounts they offer. Patrons warn that recipients of the best butt discount won't get that discount for long if they keep eating at the Twisted Root Burger Company. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 4 correct answers. Ooh. For 8 more points. He now has 9 points. Ooh. And Roy has the lead.
Well done. All right.
No.
Faith, you are up next. Fill in the blank. On Wednesday, after a 7-day strike, teachers in blank public schools returned to classrooms.
Chicago.
Yes, Tim Pawlenty announced on Thursday that he is resigning as co-chairman of blank's national campaign to take a position as a lobbyist.
Mitt Romney.
Yes. Secretary of State Clinton said Thursday she is forming a panel to investigate the attack on the consulate in blank.
Libya.
Right. On Wednesday, congressional analysts said that 6 million people might face tax penalties for not having blank insurance.
Health.
Right. Police in York, Pennsylvania are searching for a vandal with poor spelling who painted the word blank on a woman's car.
Oh, B-T-I-C-H?
So close. We'll give it to you. It was Bickth.
Oh.
Because of a security problem, the German government asked its citizens to stop using the web browser blank.
Oh, Internet Explorer.
Yes. The CDC announced this week that children are at risk of high blood pressure for eating as much blank as adults.
Cholesterol?
No, salt. In an operation known as Operation Last Call, 18 employees at JFK Airport were arrested for blanking.
Getting drunk?
Oh, no.
I love that.
For stealing over 100,000 tiny airplane liquor bottles. You know those tiny bottles?
Same thing.
You know, well, they didn't drink them. Those tiny bottles are great for sneaking booze into concerts or for holding in your hand and pretending you're an alcoholic giant. Yo, ho, ho. The employees allegedly planned to sell them in the black market or maybe set up rollicking speakeasies in dollhouses. Carl, how did Faith do?
Faith had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Faith has taken the lead.
Very well done. All right. How many, then, does Mo need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
That's a tall order. Here we go. Faith did well. Let's see if you can do as well. This is for the game, Mo. Fill in the blank. Police arrested 185 protesters blocking the New York Stock Exchange on the first anniversary of blank.
The Occupy Wall Street protest movement.
On Monday, President Obama issued an unfair trade complaint against blank, saying it improperly subsidizes the export of auto parts.
China.
Right. Apple said this week that pre-sales for the new blank reached 2 million in just one day.
It's the iPhone 5.
Indeed it is. A court-appointed trustee announced Thursday that another $2.5 billion will be returned to victims of Blank's Ponzi scheme.
Madoff, Bernie
right?
Madoff.
Because of a labor dispute with pilots, Blank said it was canceling 300 flights this week.
Oh, is that JetBlue?
No, American. American. It's American.
Carl, what do you think? You can give him that one? All right, you got it.
Sure, okay.
In an effort to tackle voter fraud, voters in Texas are receiving letters asking them if they are blank.
Letters went out to voters asking them if they were alive.
In fact, you are right.
Okay.
77,000 people got letters asking them if they were in fact dead. If they were alive, they could send a letter back or call up a special dead voter hotline and just breathe into it. Now,
how do zombies vote?
That's a good question. Undead voters are upset about being disenfranchised, and zombie organizers are trying to make sure that their voters shamble to the polls. Carl, did Mo do well enough to win?
He did. He had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. So with 18 points, Mo Rocca is this week's champion.
Well done. He dominated that. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will be the next hidden video sensation. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for homeownership, more at houselogic.com/homeownership. Angie's List, with reviews on local contractors and doctors in 500 categories, with ratings based only on member feedback, angieslist.com, and the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord, Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our brand new intern is Leah Menzer. Welcome, Leah. Our web guru is Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what would be the next surprising thing from a hidden video? Mr. Roy Blunt Jr.
It's not going to be a scandalous thing at all. It's just going to be kind of cute. It's two old friends. They have been drinking. But it's Winston Churchill going, Hamtown racetrack 5 miles long. That's not too bad. And then Albert Einstein comes in. They got their arms around each other. And he says, doodah, doodah.
Did you just come from Disney World?
Faith Saley.
In light of the discovery of a papyrus segment that mentions Jesus' wife, the secret tape is Jesus' wedding video, in which he announces it's his day off, so it's a cash bar.
And Mo Rocca.
A video in which a cat is sitting at a laptop and laughing hysterically at a video of Glenn Gould playing the piano.
Well, if any of that comes out, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Great to have you back. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Faith Saley, Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks also this week to Amy Smith, Shelley Klepsaddle, and the staff and crew at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks to everyone at WABE. Thanks to our fabulous audience here in this fabulous building. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR.
Nashville Opera presents Puccini's masterpiece, Madame Butterfly, a young girl's first love, a promise made in the heat of passion, and now she waits for him in vain. She who cannot live with honor must die with honor. Madame Butterfly features the Nashville Symphony. Puccini's Madame Butterfly, Thursday, October 11th, and Saturday, October 13th, with two performances in TPAC's Jackson Hall. Information is available at 832-5242 or nashvilleopera.org. Support for this program comes from Nashville Public Radio listener members. Make a pledge of support for the programming you value on WPLN, and you could win an 8-day tour for two of England and Scotland. Our fall e-pledge drawing will be held September 28th. Pledge now at WPLN.org. ¶¶
celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.